interrupting the current neo-uranial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 682. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed and bring those miscreants with you. Donation season continuing. If you could please find the donation buttons at all the places that there's links to the donation buttons, reallibertymedia.com. Either you can give the crew a coffee, probably the quickest and easiest way, but if you have more to provide, go ahead and hit the other donate button. And the content providers, we would like more content. Bring it in and tell the people what your truth is. I'd like to have it all backed up and put together, so no, there's no doubt. We don't have an argument. And that's one thing I found interesting over all these years. I really don't get any arguments with what I present. Maybe people don't like the direction I go. Maybe they don't like, I don't go deep enough sometimes. I've explained why some of that is. Maybe y'all are just not quite ready. And that's not a slight, because there's so much to know. And if you don't have the basic foundation, then you tend to make it up. And I have never been here to make stuff up. Try to explain what the situation is. So please donate to the network and keep the machines running. I am amazed at how much it's taking to get an actual industrial grade system going way beyond what Grimner ever thought of doing and patching together, essentially. It was a nice little hobby for him. And he always laughed about that. That was the fun part about it. But when we moved on and we start to see what's going on in the world, it becomes a lot more important to make sure that you're not vulnerable. And that's been a big work, and to try and make it more automated. And then we get these new tools coming in and trying to make sure, again, that the tool doesn't use you. You don't become a tool. You are using the issues, the systems to move forward what we need to have move forward. So please donate. Find the buttons again. Do what you can. I appreciate everything that's been done to keep us here. We're still here, folks. This was not a done deal. I keep telling you, I don't know if people really appreciate how close to not to a done deal we were going to be. We were going to be gone. And Sound Mind stepped up. So, and a couple other people. I don't want to dismiss anybody, but I'm not thanking you already. And some people that were still hoping that we would move along, they're all still here. They're all in the background. So we're all waiting for the rest of everyone to start showing back up. Sound pretty well stabilized this thing, and we have now the new system coming on, new help to do that. And anybody that, again, helped before, I mean, there may or may not be places depending on what your expertise is. Again, this is a collaborative effort, if you will, that way. Everybody brings what they want, or they can, what they want to bring to make their additions to what's going on. But now you're a non-spectator representative kleptocratic caucusocracy, now AI-enhanced, AI-written bills riddled with errors flooding U.S. Congress. It's AI-arrow pro-nation, seems. Just as I've been saying, congressional lawyers are reportedly spending more time fixing some chatbot-written bills than it would take to draft them from scratch. U.S. congressional lawyers are struggling with a flood of error-ridden, AI-generated legislation, forcing them to spend increasingly more time rewriting proposals produced by chatbots. And so you see right there the name. They're just chatbots. They're not designed necessarily to write this legislation. But all this is this error-ridden. This is what I've been saying, right? AI error pronation. The pronation for AI errors, now it's being put to legislation. Staffers and outside groups have more frequently turned to ChatGPT and Claude to produce legislative text, with AI error-ridden drafts regularly reaching the House of Office of Legislative Council, OLC, according to 8 current and former officials. Now, I look at that OLC, it always interests me to watch the federal-state connection to these designations as well, even though they say we're supposed to be different in several and different jurisdictions, and yet we're really using all the model laws. And we're going to touch it. If I get to the very, very end, we're going to touch that and what Trump might be doing to try and burrow in on that problem, which is going to be very interesting to watch. I've been talking about this problem forever. All the time I've been writing before I even got on the broadcast and in the broadcast. In some cases, lawyers spend, quote, more time trying to fix AI-drafted legislation than it would take for them to draft it from scratch. Close quote, one person who advises congressional staff on the technology said, the OLC helps lawmakers turn policy proposals into bills and ensure they fit existing U.S. law. However, AI-generated drafts have reportedly arrived with incorrect statutory references, confused legal definitions, and wording that could produce unintended consequences if enacted. Confused legal definition? Well, then even AI understands legal very well, wouldn't you say? I wonder how AI harmonizes thou shalt not infringe. One example cited by Politico defined a state, quote, state, close quote, in a way that would exclude Washington, D.C., or tribal nations from a federal program. Wait, what? The District of Washington, D.C. is a state? Doesn't sound like we're in Kansas anymore, Toto. AI can also confuse legal mechanisms such as a tax credits, deductions, and grants. And you say taxes are a civil right? What? Is that confusion or an acknowledgement? As to the tax credits and deductions, AI likely knows tax is the civil right of extortion, which anybody can read at 42 U.S.C. 1981. And it also knows giving credits and deductions is not logical, makes no sense, where the government can give the other civil rights of punishments and penalties instead. Because with the power to extort, why give taxpayer any relief AI compiles? And that's not logical unless it's to encourage better taxpayer incentive to compliance before bringing down the boots of punishment and pains on the human capital captives, because corporations are people too. But the errors are adding to an already heavy workload. The OLC has 61 attorneys and 19 support staff and received 5,623 legislative requests during the first 60 days of the current Congress, up 72% from the same period 2 years ago. Well, whatever slows up the list, legislators then, right? AI use is becoming increasingly common on Capitol Hill. Four congressional staffers told Politico, saying that the chatbots are used to review and draft legislation. The introduction of generative tools, however, has already led to a number of public blunders. In June, Republican Representative Ana Paulina Luna's office published an amendment summary containing the words, quote, Claude responded, close quote, along with other text copied from the chatbot. Luna said AI had been used on the summary rather than the amendment itself, and added that the inclusion of Claude's remarks was, quote, not a shocker, most staff use it, close quote, and they know it's error-ridden, and they still publish the error. A similar episode recently occurred in Kanukistan, where New Brunswick lawmaker Bill Oliver admitted using AI to prepare a lengthy speech after reading leftover chatbot instructions aloud in the legislature, including, quote, here's a more natural, flowing version of that section that reads like a legislative speech rather than a series of short points, close quote. AI-related errors have also reached the U.S. courts. Two federal judges came under scrutiny last year over filings containing inaccurate quotations, factual errors, and incorrect case references, with AI reportedly involved in at least one case. So word to the wise. Not just corrupt enough, it's going to get AI enhanced, that corruption. The State Department also apologized last month after using an AI-generated map that misplaced all six African countries it highlighted. Despite such blunders, the OLC is also exploring how AI could assist its work. The office told Congress in March that it had formed a working group to examine uses such as legal research and had already introduce specialized technology to help its lawyers draft legislation, despite the blunders. We want our fair share of those blunders, too. And so who is it that is watching the watchers again? Israel wants ChatGPT to push its Gaza narrative. Error-prone. And now we're seeing how that's possible. The country has launched a campaign to shape how AI models answer questions about its war on Hamas and the IDF amid declining public support in the U.S. And I'm really having trouble that they define that as a war. You don't take a people that are essentially defenseless that are being attacked by a belligerent occupier and call that a war. That's and you just want to take out those people completely and from their land, that's genocide. They want to get you to believe it's a war, but it isn't. Israel has spent tens of millions of dollars to boost its image in the U.S. by seeking to influence how AI platforms portray the country. U.S. public attitudes toward Israel have deteriorated in recent years, first over its response to October 7, 2023 Hamas attacks, and more recently over the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran and its cost to taxpayers. Again, U.S.-Israeli war on Iran, and Trump has the gall to make demands on Iran. 6 in 10 U.S. adults now view Israel somewhat or very unfavorably, according to a June Pew Research Center poll, up from 53% last year and 42% in 2022. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is even less popular, with 65% expressing little or no confidence in his policies. And to me, that's a very serious number. It needs to be over 68% before we have any kind of input on changing that. And it doesn't seem like 3% is much, but if you don't get to 68, you're not even beginning to change the status quo. Remember, I've talked about that. That's if voting is okay, if what your opinion means something. In a report on Friday, Politico detailed a $100,000 Israeli campaign aimed at influencing how large language models such as ChatGPT answers questions about Gaza and Israeli-Hamas war. The effort centers on the Hanover Institute for Public Policy, a website publishing anonymous reports on anti-Semitism and geopolitical issues. And I'll bet none of those reports will say that the Palestinian people are Semitic people being attacked by the Zionist political movement. The project was set up through French PR firm Havas Media, which handles much of Israel's U.S. influence work registered under the U.S. Foreign Agents Registration Act, FARA, and its subcontractor and agency Pyro Incorporated, and on behalf of the Israel government advertising agency LAPAM. The Hanover Institute described its work as, quote, documentary, not declarative, close quote, and says its research is purely academic. Politico, however, cited FARA documents filed with the U.S. Justice Department last week, linking more than a dozen of its articles to a PR campaign that involved, quote, the creation and dissemination of factual, source-sorted informational materials, close quote, intended to, quote, educate, close quote, the U.S. public about Israel. And do not forget, they're attempting to integrate this with the United States Army, which really isn't much change, is it? Because the United States Army, military actually, is already doing perception management. But now we see where it's going to turn, if you haven't noticed already. The website hosts multiple unattributed reports framed as questions, including, quote, is torture of Palestinian prisoners a war crime, close quote, and, quote, who is the aggressor in the Israeli-Palestine conflict, close quote, which Politico said suggests the material was designed to be picked up and cited by LLMs. The outlet also said technical markers link the website to RES, a Seattle-based AI startup that helps clients get recommended by AI models. So look at the dynamic there. They put a bunch of information under the website, made up websites, just make them up, pay the registration for the domain or even one that exists, make an article and let the bot scrape it. And that becomes part of your human knowledge that our AI models would be using. The link was confirmed by REST CEO Hai Tran in an email. While Pyro's FARA filings do not explicitly identify influencing LLMs as a goal, and why would it, Politico said both ChatGPT and Perplexity cited Hanover Institute material in response to neutral queries about Gaza and Israel. And as I'm reading through these things, all these stories I hear about what these LLMs do and how they acquire their models acquire, we almost have to have other models with building lists to act like malware that goes through and checks the definitions, the problem areas of information and the sourcing so that we can get those taken out. We're going to have AI filtration systems on all of this, it seems. It is not Israel's first Hamas-linked effort to sway public opinion, including through AI. Of course not. We're just finding out about it. Although you could have heard about it behind the woodshed years ago. According to the WSJ investigation published last month, the firm previously hired former campaign manager for U.S. President Donald Trump, Brad Parscale, for the $46.5 million campaign that included pro-Israel AI-generated messaging targeting Americans, as well as websites and posts designed to generate more favorable responses from AI platforms. Last fall, responsible Statecraft reported that Havas Media also managed an, quote, influencer campaign, close quote, which paid $900,000 for producing Israel-friendly content. U.S. frustration with Israel has extended beyond the general public, with politicians also becoming increasingly critical. To me, that's a real problem, because you just need to look at what Israel's doing in Palestine, and it's not being critical. You now have to arrest the criminal. You don't have a criticality about it. You have to arrest it. You have to take measures to stop it. Last month, more than 100 House Democrats backed an amendment that would have cut $3.3 billion in U.S. aid to Israel. And remember, that's being shifted if this Israel bill this Futures Act gets integrated, and Israel gets integrated. $3.3 goes away, and they fund it from inside the Pentagon. I'm not going to have a link for it, but Israel just dropped another list of what it wants. That price goes to $40 billion now, and a whole bunch more things go on. The measure failed due to Republican opposition, but highlighted a growing partisan divide. Just over 2 years ago, only 37 House Democrats backed a similar effort. Trump has been largely supportive of Israel, but has repeatedly criticized Netanyahu, who slammed the ceasefire with Iran announced by the U.S. president earlier this summer and rejected the 15-point Bordeaux peace plan for Gaza in the Kabuki theater that we've been presented with to believe it. That's the narrative and that's the truth. No, there's no fight at all. Again, Trump has the say he could shut this down immediately. Trump also has yet to endorse Netanyahu ahead of the October election and has repeatedly dodged questions about his re-election, according to media reports. Two senior U.S. officials told Axios this week that while Trump likes Netanyahu personally, he has grown frustrated with his policies and called Netanyahu, quote, his own worst enemy, close quote. And from the Department of Oopsie, was that another narrative promotion? CENTCOM maps show Gaza and West Bank as part of Israel. U.S. Central Command appears to have failed geography again, posting a map of the Middle East in which the Gaza Strip and the West Bank are shown as Israeli territory. And another failed test. They also meant Palestine. And that's three strikes. So you're out, CENTCOM. See, the problem for Trump's military is some of us were required to take geography in school. This military intelligence, so-called, boy, it's such an embarrassing disgrace. The map accompanied a post on X about the CENTCOM commander's 10-day trip to a region torn by the U.S.-Israeli aggression against Iran. The U.S.-Israeli aggression against Iran didn't start in 1948. In the image, the Palestinian enclave, it should be Palestine there. The Palestinian enclave and the West Bank are not separated from Israel by the border lines used elsewhere on the map. The omission is striking, as Gaza and the West Bank remain central to the Palestinian question and the wider regional crisis. And that's the problem. Palestinians have land. It's called Palestine. That's not a question. They've made it a question, not much different than saying there's a war when it's actually a genocide, and getting you to buy into the false narrative just by using the word. Israel continues its war, its genocide on Gaza and Lebanon, with full U.S. support. As I said, so much for Trump not liking Netanyahu to allow genocide, the one that Netanyahu is causing, and to get wider and wider and larger. This can't be a war, because it always has been planned to be a genocide, and by an illegal belligerent unlawfully occupying a foreign territory. Right, Rothschild? I hope folks have been studying to find the documents now that are coming out, just laying this all out. And so I don't want to hear more from the president of the Billionaire Boys Bordeaux Pretense Resort Casino and Kushner Water Theme Park from the river to the sea. And narratives are not pushed just by ChatGPT. As we heard, CENTCOM and now U.S. sanctions ICC president and senior prosecutor as Trump administration escalates campaign against court. I just need to throw in as I read that. The United States is not a party to the treaty that brings up the ICC court. And it's always arguing against it. Why is it even interesting? U.S. ICC sanctions of 2026 escalated sharply Wednesday as the Trump administration imposed sanctions on International Criminal Court President Judge Tomoko Akane and senior ICC trial lawyer Abdoulaye Seye, expanding Washington's campaign against the Hague-based tribunal. Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced that Akane, a Japanese national, and Seye, a Senegalese national, were designated under Executive Order 14203, quote, imposing sanctions on the International Criminal Court, close quote. So let's jump down, way, way down, to read the partially legitimate but spacious concern that says the United States is not a party to the Rome Statute. Washington therefore rejects the idea that the court should be able to exercise jurisdiction over U.S. nationals without U.S. consent. This is actually written in that article as a reason. But there are no U.S. nationals over which the ICC is exercising jurisdiction right now. And Trump said last week Rubio was protecting someone foreign to the U.S., Satan Yehu. And Satan Yehu, to my understanding, is not a U.S. citizen. Maybe a U.S. welfare queen, but not a U.S. citizen. So it's quite the extension of U.S. jurisdiction for Rubio to accuse ICC of overreach. Rubio used unusually strong language in announcing the action. He characterized the ICC as politicized and accused it of abusing its authority. Rubio projecting much? Jurisdictional overreach, indeed. Especially when Trump let the cat out of the bag that Rubio is protecting Satan Yehu and Israel, not America or Americans, and to continue to commit genocide and war crimes. Those claims represent the U.S. administration's position and are disputed by supporters of the court who argue that the ICC provides a legal forum for prosecuting genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes when domestic systems are unable or unwilling to act. But it's not even that. They can exist. The United States doesn't even have to have an opinion about it. The United States doesn't have to have anything going with this. You don't even have to support that court. It just exists. You can have no opinion about it whatsoever and still come to the conclusion I just told you just a moment ago. And remember, on 1st of June 2015, the government of the state of Palestine, did you hear that? The government of the state of Palestine lodged a declaration under Article 12, parentheses 3 of the Rome Statute, accepting the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, over alleged crimes committed in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, since June 13, 2014. On 2nd January of 2015, the state of Palestine acceded to the Rome Statute by depositing its instrument of accession with the UN Secretary General. The Rome Statutes entered into force for the state of Palestine on 1st of April 2015, and the Zionists want to make that an April Fool's joke, don't they? But if Israel didn't want to be subject to ICC jurisdiction by way of a complaint by Palestine against Israel, the Zionist political movement shouldn't have become an illegal belligerent occupying force in Palestine or attacked the Palestinian people over which the ICC does have jurisdiction. And if we want to talk about overreach, Rubio has no authority or jurisdiction to change these events or what the illegal, belligerent, occupying, or invading force called Israel has done. Rubio, as well as Trump, are supposed to be protecting Americans, not Zionist political movement Zionopaths. Besides, as Satan Yehu will boast, they know how to protect themselves. So let them. Iran might have something to say about that, though. Let them work that out. And we can read as well regarding that ICC, State of Palestine in Israel, from the International Criminal Court website, that on 21 November 2024, ICC Pretrial Chamber 1 also issued two decisions rejecting challenges by the State of Israel brought under Articles 18 and 19 of the Rome Statute, and issued warrants of arrest for Benjamin Netanyahu and Mr. Yoav Gallant, which I reported behind the woodshed when that was doing, for crimes against humanity and war crimes committed from at least October 8, 2023 until at least 20 May 2024, total subject matter within the jurisdiction of that, by someone who's acceded to their authority, Palestine, the government of Palestine. Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel at the time of the relevant conduct, and Mr. Yoav Gallant, Minister of Defense of Israel at the time of the alleged conduct, are suspected of the war crimes of starvation as a method of warfare and of intentionally directing an attack against civilian populations, and the crimes against humanity of murder, persecution, and other inhumane acts. Meaning, in their answer to the ICC, Israel acknowledged the jurisdiction of the ICC over that matter when it filed the challenge, and the ICC decided. So Trump nor Rubio have any grounds to complain. And this action by Rubio is simply to protect Israel and Netanyahu, not America. And I haven't heard either Trump nor Rubio take an oath of office to Israel or to operate out of the White House or the U.S. State Department that way, have you? Or as Iranian Minister of Foreign Affairs Abbas Araghchi said, quote, funny, Saddam trial? Fine. Invade Iraq? Fine. Kidnap Maduro? Fine. ICC indicts Netanyahu? Now it's about sovereignty. And as this Greater Zionist Project expands, and the sabers have been rattling, Turkey could consider retaliatory strikes against Israeli assets. And this is after the fact of what they're going to explain in the article happened. Turkey could potentially launch its first retaliatory strikes against Israeli assets in Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon in response to Israeli airstrikes that Ankara says targeted Turkish-linked assets in Syria. Turkish officials reportedly claim that Israel has struck Turkish assets and facilities in Syria, including assets associated with NATO-linked deployments. Any direct Turkish military response against Israeli targets would mark a major escalation between the two NATO and Middle Eastern powers, significantly raising the risk of a broader regional confrontation. But there is only one regional confrontation, isn't there? And then I'd have you consider this from a few months ago. Trump says he's considering pulling U.S. out of NATO over Iran war stance. President Donald Trump said he is weighing a potential U.S. withdrawal from NATO, citing frustration with allies over their response to the Iran conflict. President Donald Trump said he is strongly considering pulling the United States out of NATO over the alliance's refusal to join his administration's efforts in the Iran conflict, according to a report. Quote, I was never swayed by NATO and ATO, close quote, Trump told the Daily Telegraph in an interview published Wednesday. And this is about a year ago, this article. The president, long a critic of the military alliance, which has been pivotal in maintaining global order since World War II, said reconsidering the matter was, quote, beyond reconsideration, close quote. So pulling out of NATO removes the U.S. from Article 5 protection requirements and considerations when Israel attacks Turkey in its Greater Zionist Project expansion, and NATO then is no impediment to that expansion and even continuing U.S. support of Israel. It seems Trump has been thinking about advancing the Greater Zionist Project expansion for a real long time. And they kill Christians, don't they? U.S. envoy condemns Israeli strikes on Syrian airbase. Tom Barak says the attack undermines regional security and constitutes an unnecessary escalation. U.S. Ambassador to Turkey, Tom Barak, has condemned Israeli airstrikes on an airbase in northwestern Syria as a dangerous escalation. On Tuesday, Israeli forces struck the Abu al-Dur base in Idlib province near the Turkish border. Although there were no casualties, the strikes damaged recently built runways. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office said the attack was carried out because Israel and Syria had agreed to, quote, a status quo in security matters, close quote, and claimed that Damascus was, quote, on the verge, close quote, of breaching the arrangement by allowing, quote, Turkish troops to deploy at an airbase near Aleppo. That agreement allowed unilateral military action by Israel inside of Syria. Sovereign territorial integrity says, I'll take, what is, I doubt that, for $1,000, Alex. Quote, Israel repeatedly warned Syria that such a deployment would pose a threat to Israel's security. Syria chose to ignore these warnings, close quote, it added. Both Syria and Turkey denied the claims. Barak, who also serves as U.S. President Donald Trump's envoy to Syria and Iraq, said the strikes, quote, constituted a necessary escalation that does not advance regional stability, close quote. Barak added that the government of Syrian President Omar al-Sharar and former ISIS leader Jilani, quote, has neither adopted a predatory posture nor maintained proxy forces, close quote, and was committed to, quote, de-escalation with Israel, close quote. Quote, we encourage all parties to prioritize logical discourse over further military incidents, close quote, Barak wrote on X on Tuesday. Now do Palestine, U.S. Ambassador Barak. Syrian Foreign Minister Assad al-Shirabani told Axios on Wednesday that Damascus had, quote, no intention, close quote, of establishing a Turkish base or allowing a permanent Turkish military presence at the site. The Turkish Foreign Ministry similarly accused Israel of resorting to, quote, frivolous allegations, close quote, to legitimize its attacks on Syria. Netanyahu defended the strikes on a podcast on Wednesday, quote, the message was conveyed, but apparently they did not hear it. So we made sure they understood it more clearly, close quote, he said. Netanyahu has repeatedly clashed with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, a vocal critic of Israel's war in Gaza. Again, it's a genocide. Erdogan's supposed to be acting, but he's just a vocal critic, right? Just a vocal critic. When Erdogan warned Israel to withdraw invading troops in 2025, saying, quote, the forces attacking Syrian territories must immediately put an end to their aggressive actions, why didn't he bomb the Israeli military outposts in Syria, saying, as Israel just did to Turkey, that such a deployment poses a threat to Turkey's security? The message was conveyed, but apparently they didn't hear it, so we made sure they understood it more clearly. That he didn't shows Erdogan is weak, all talk, or politically and geopolitically benefits, as it does NATO, to only talk. Especially when Erdogan specifically recognizes that ongoing genocide in Palestine, from which the Israeli military terrorist occupiers entered Syria, saying, where genocide has been going on for 15 months. Trump earlier condemned Israeli strikes in southern Lebanon, saying that they could undermine peace talks with Iran. What peace talks? And condemns how? And why not insist Israel just stop invading Lebanon for the same reasons Barak analyzed Turkey by not aiding and abetting Zionist political movement and regional terrorism? That Lebanon has neither adopted a predatory posture nor maintained proxy forces, close quote. Remember, he just said that. More so Palestine. And to show Muslims are probably closer to Christians than the Zionists are, for sure. Muslim kingdom prepares to celebrate baptism of Jesus. Jordan wants to attract more Christian pilgrims for the 2,000-year anniversary in 2030. Jordan is preparing to mark the 2,000-year anniversary of Jesus Christ's baptism in Jordan River, with the Muslim nation investing more than $100 million mic dollars to draw Christian pilgrims to one of the world's holiest sites. And yes, it's not lost on me that it's like it would be like shooting fish in a barrel for Israel, wouldn't it? Being that Jordan is sympathetic. But Jordanian Prime Minister Jafar Hassan met with Christian leaders this month and signed agreements to develop the baptism site by building a village for Christian pilgrims and visitors, a museum dedicated to the baptism, a green corridor, and infrastructure upgrades leading to the site. The project is expected to cost $120 million, Vatican Media reported. The year 2030, Agenda 2030, what an adulteration. The year 2030 is widely accepted as the 2-millennium anniversary of Christ's baptism by John the Baptist, a moment that marked the beginning of Jesus' public ministry. The ceremony took place in Bethany beyond the Jordan, on the east bank of the Jordan River, which today separates Jordan from the Israeli-occupied West Bank. That CENTCOM says it's Israeli, not Palestine. At the time of Jesus' baptism, Bethany beyond the Jordan was a part of Perea, a Jewish client state of Rome. 4 popes has visited Bethany beyond the Jordan. Paul VI in 1964, before the site was excavated and restored, followed by John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and Francis. Jordan is the only country to have hosted these 4 pontiffs. But this is Catholicism, so getting beyond that, although Jordan is a Muslim country, with Islam enshrined as its state religion, it is home to around 350,000 Christians. And again, to remind us, Jews, Christians, and Muslims all lived in harmony together in Palestine before the Zionists moved in and infiltrated and occupied the place. Speaking at the meeting with Christian leaders, Hassan said that honoring the anniversary of the baptism, quote, reflects Jordan's historical and religious standing and its role as a global destination for Christian pilgrimage while highlighting the kingdom's message of coexistence, close quote. And so I still wonder, why does the Jordanian government allow and help Israel? Zionists, not religion, politics. And except that they highlight the Catholic fallible ones as well here. Which will also tell us something when looking at the very subtle, exalted, even preferential status of Mary, Mother of Jesus, in the religion there. So the very careful things to look at as we're listening through, those of us that do the study, to see how subtle the difference is, and it is a difference. But I'm not so sure it's so different that it should cause any trouble whatsoever. We don't have the final say, and I think that relieves everybody of the pressure to worry about it. 2 of the holiest sites for Christian pilgrims, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, where Jesus was crucified, and the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, where he was born, are located across the Jordan River in Israeli-occupied Palestinian territory. Well, who'd have thunk it? There it is. Palestinian territory. But military intelligence and CENTCOM got it wrong. Although visitors can normally access the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in East Jerusalem, pilgrims traveling to Bethlehem must pass through a system of Israeli military checkpoints, barriers, and road closures, which are often shut by the Israeli Defense Force, the IDF, without prior notice. The Zionist political movement military puts up barriers to those worshiping Jesus Christ. It's clearly anti-Christ. It turns out anti-Semitic. From the International Department of Alter or Abolish, a confirmation update. Hezbollah won't disarm. Beirut residents tell RT. Locals in the Lebanese capital have labeled the U.S.-brokered framework peace deal with Israel, quote, a disgrace and humiliation, close quote, for their country. Residents of a Hezbollah stronghold in Beirut have said that they will not trade the group's weapons for reconstruction money while decrying a U.S.-brokered framework peace agreement between Lebanon and Israel. The Dahiye neighborhood in the southwestern part of the Lebanese capital has suffered extensive destruction from strikes by West Jerusalem, by strikes from the belligerent foreign-occupying invasion force, not Jerusalem. Jerusalem's still down there somewhere, not up in Lebanon. Since the escalation of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in 2023 and its subsequent spillover into Lebanon, spillover or the Greater Zionism Project in action? That isn't a question. The deal signed between the Lebanese and Israeli government in late June envisages the Israeli Defense Force, IDF, pulling out of southern Lebanon to be replaced by Lebanese military, which would oversee the disarmament of Hezbollah. Israel is a foreign invader in Lebanon, and the government of Lebanon should be protecting the Lebanese people from the Zionist political movement invasion and illegal belligerent occupation of Lebanon. According to the documents, internationally supported reconstruction of the country would only begin after the group lays down its arms. Now, since when does anything international have any weight on the internal national security matters of the national sovereignty, which is defined as the people themselves of Lebanon, as I explained last episode? Since when? Hezbollah has called the agreement, quote, a surrender, close quote, to Israel, and warned that attempts to enforce it could lead to conflict. The same game plan for Iran. Iran knows it cannot agree, or Iran is no more. The sentiment is shared by locals in Dahiyeh who continue to support Hezbollah despite Israeli attacks, RT Steve Tweedy has reported from the area. Now we're hearing there the mutual agreement required of any people exercising their right to alter or abolish. But remember, Hezbollah is only demanding restoration, not revolution. The overthrow of the existing government is not what they're asking about. They want integration. They just want Israel out the way, and they want the Lebanese government to start protecting the national sovereignty, the people themselves, not making these international disgrace broker deals that are disgraceful to the government. The country, the guy said, the country is the people and this territory. One shopkeeper blasted the agreement as, quote, humiliation and disgrace, close quote, for his country, insisting that, quote, it brought no benefit to the Lebanese state, close quote. Another said, quote, are they offering us money in exchange for restricting the resistance weapons? Let them state the amount. We would raise it ourselves rather than trade away the resistance's arms. Got a Second Amendment, folks? Trade the arms as well as their status as a national sovereignty to the international trespassing vampire squid horde, they would. The World Bank. See? The World Bank. Part of the internationally supported trespassing vampire squid horde, keeping track of the Zionists' investment. The World Bank estimates that Lebanon's reconstruction after Israeli airstrikes and ground invasion will cost at least 11 billion Bravo dollars. So an illegal belligerent terrorist invading causes $11 billion damages, destroys the communities, people, and their very cultures, the ancient religious areas, and still has any say in the matter? And while the nations of the world watch, is the problem with the sellout Lebanese government and the international trespassing terrorist horde it allows to have any right of negotiation or say? Physical damage from the 2023 to 2024 war between IDF and Hezbollah alone was put at 6.8 billion Bravo dollars, with the assessment not including the subsequent destruction. The $18 billion should have already been withheld from Israel and given to Lebanon to rebuild. Has Trump done that, or is he and the Lebanese government complicit in war crimes against the national sovereignty, the people of Lebanon? And Trump don't give up. Trump vows to declare Strait of Hormuz U.S. territory. Does any of the people go to school? Claim clashes with Iran. Oman control of key oil checkpoint. Now, the Strait of Hormuz is not land, that it can be a territory, this idiot-in-chief. He shouldn't say this even if he were trolling in part because it's senseless and nonsensically absurd. And then trolling who? Anyway, trolling is done in water too, isn't it? President Trump apparently has a new target for American expansion. American expansion? Israel is already integrated here? One of the world's most strategic shipping choke points. The maritime channel or shipping choke points aren't land or an island either. Speaking on Long Island on Friday, the president said, quote, pretty soon, I will be declaring the Hormuz Strait a territory of the United States, close quote, even though the narrow waterway between Iran and Oman is not under U.S. sovereignty. Nor can it be. And it's just a tad farther away from the U.S. territory than 12 nautical miles from the baseline. Just a tad. Or did I miss the Truth Social memo that Iran is the actual 51st state of the United States? Sorry, Kazakhstan. He offered no explanation for how Washington could claim ownership of the passage, which also bordered by Iran to the north and Oman to the south. He also claimed Iran, quote, is being very badly defeated, close quote, at the moment. And I hear the Persian state just declared the Gulf of America to be the Gulf of Iran. So, neener, take that. They're also making another claim. And this is how the Iran embassy in Ghana responded to Trump's non-territorial claim. If proximity is no longer required for territorial claims, as in Trump's acid fantasies, we'd like Paradise, Nevada. Paradise is Persian. It's called Pardis. Las Vegas is also included in the package. In fact, we'll take the whole state of Nevada and rename it Navdan, meaning gutter in Persian. Once we've corrected a number of things there, Paradise in Las Vegas shall be known as New Pardis. And I think we found a redefinition for Trump derangement syndrome as a term. Such a peacemaker. Trump threatens to bomb the SH-T out of Oman, and despite Oman's key role as a mediator between Washington and Tehran. The guy's completely deranged. Tehran and Muscat are discussing a parallel Hormuz deal as talks with Washington stall. In addition to brokering talks between the U.S. and Iran, Omani negotiators have been conducting parallel negotiations with Tehran aimed at establishing a safe route for shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. And I hear latest news is they have reached a decision and they have put the finals together and they're working that out between themselves, as maybe they should be. I'm not going to think more about that part. Iran reportedly wants to charge fees for safe passage of the strait after an interim period, and Iranian Foreign Minister spokesman Ismail Baghaei told reporters on Monday that Iran had reached an understanding with Oman on the matter. Asked about these Omani-Iranian talks, Trump told Fox News that, quote, if Oman gets in the way, we'll bomb the SH-T out of them, close quote. The U.S. rejects any agreement that would involve Iran collecting tolls, and Washington has signaled that it will not lift its blockade on Iranian ports unless Tehran relinquishes this demand. Speaking in New York on Friday, Trump claimed the Islamic Republic was, quote, very badly defeated, close quote, and that he would soon, quote, be declaring the Strait of Hormuz a territory of the U.S., close quote, when the Strait isn't a territory, no less. A memorandum of understanding signed by the U.S., Trump himself, and Iran in June set a 60-day window to bring the conflict to an end and reopen the strait. Memorandum expired without a deal and with both sides threatening escalation on Monday. A senior Iranian official told Reuters that Iran is prepared, quote, to escalate tensions in the Strait of Hormuz and wider region, close quote, if diplomacy fails, and to launch, quote, timely and precise strikes, close quote, to break the U.S. naval blockade if necessary. Trump did not reply directly to this threat in his comments to Fox News, but demanded that Iran, quote, raise the white flag of surrender, close quote. I guess he can keep asking. It's embarrassing, but he can keep asking, right? In a post on X on Saturday, Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Kazem Garababadi urged Trump to, quote, accept the reality, close quote, that the U.S. has suffered, quote, strategic and heavy defeats, close quote. Quote, the Strait of Hormuz has been Iranian, is Iranian, and will remain Iranian, close quote, Garababadi wrote, adding that the waterway, quote, will only be closed and open under Iran's command, close quote. U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran in late February prompted Tehran to close the Strait of Hormuz, with Washington responding by imposing a naval blockade of Iranian ports. The blockade disrupted traffic through one of the world's most important energy corridors, sending global oil prices soaring to as high as $100 and $20 a barrel. And if this is not deranged enough, former Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene said, from information leaked to her, that she was being informed that the White House has been seriously contemplating dropping nuclear bombs on Iran, which sounds like the actual Trump derangement syndrome. And while Trump announces most crushing economic operation in history against Iran, do we know by now that we need to replace Iran with the United States and Americans? You know this thing for Israel against Iran is not ending until Trump destroys Americans economically, moving the U.S. into the Siberian gulag. And if there's any argument in this, where is the $2 a gallon gas Trump promised, for one? And as Trump says, he is quite fine with pumping and dumping $100 a barrel oil for his billionaire boy's profit on top of all that. Trump announces most crushing economic operation in history against United States and Americans. U.S. President Donald Trump has announced the start of the most crushing economic operation in history against America. The Post says Iran. I'm saying America. Over the latter's alleged refusal to reach a deal with the United States. On Tuesday, Trump said that Washington was not holding and did not plan to hold any talks with Tehran. But what talks before of any consequence that Trump didn't violate? And before that, they did have a deal. Trump signed his big fat name onto the memo of understanding, which is an obligation of the United States government. Saint Yehu objected, and Trump folded like the cheap suit he's turned out to be, and Americans are all paying for it. This economic hardship is likely just the beginning, but it will go global, as it appears to be planned. Overnight into June 18th, Tehran and Washington signed a memorandum to end the conflict that began on February 28th. However, on June 8th, Trump announced that the ceasefire was no longer in effect, and the U.S. forces have since carried out several series of strikes on Iran. The U.S. Central Command claimed that the strikes were in response to Iranian actions against commercial vessels crossing the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian forces responded with strikes on U.S. bases in the Middle East. On July 12th, Iran announced the closure of the Strait of Hormuz until the end of U.S. interference in the region, following another wave of exchanges of strikes between the parties to the conflict. The next day, Trump said the United States would become a, quote, guardian, close quote, of the Strait of Hormuz. He also reinstated the U.S. blockade of Iranian ports. And remember, the lunatic declared a navigation channel, the Strait of Hormuz, water, to be U.S. territory, land. On Thursday, U.S. President Donald Trump called his economic operation against Iran an isolation of an unprecedented scale and urged allies to join the U.S., describing it as an economic D-Day analogous to the Allied landings in Normandy. That will end up as the assault causing economic destitution that day for Americans, won't it? Sounds more like it'll turn out to be like the military campaign instead called Operation Epic Economic FUBAR, the most American-crushing economic operation in history. Now, this is your notice in the newsness. Protect yourselves accordingly. Right now, the Iranian Foreign Minister Saeed Abbas Araghchi responded to Trump's Economic D-Day declaration. Quote, the so-called Economic D-Day is a diversion from America's own crisis, unprecedented debt, and surging interest costs, close quote, he wrote on X. Unprecedented. Trump is the unprecedented president of thieves. Araghchi wrote, doubling down on failed policy will only bring further defeat and enmity of Iranians. U.S. economic terrorism threatens global economy and sovereignty worldwide, close quote, Araghchi added. Araghchi also attached photos and reports highlighting the unprecedented growth. Unprecedented again. Highlighting the unprecedented growth of the U.S. national debt, including headlines noting that the debt has reached $40 trillion tango dollars after decades of borrowing. So Araghchi is talking about the same fiat fiasco Trump exacerbated to unprecedented levels with his buffoonery, in which I don't see how do you pay back a debt like that when you don't have dollar one to pay with? Remember, you're dealing in debt instruments. There's nothing that pays a thing. How are we getting out of that one? And all this crushing of America costs a lot, a whole lot. As we just heard, U.S. debt tops $40 trillion tango dollars as interest costs soar. Soaring interest costs, war spending, and tax cuts fuel deficits. America just crossed a financial line it's never seen before. Unprecedented, folks. The national debt has blown past $40 trillion tango dollars. The government is set to borrow more than $2 trillion tango dollars this year alone, driven by war spending in Iran. I think they're only asking for like 50 to 80 million, weren't they? $2 trillion driven by the war spending in Iran, rising costs for major benefit programs, and tax cuts championed by Republicans and signed by President Trump. Tax cuts. Extortion cuts for a few. Roughly half of this year's deficit is now interest on existing debt, prompting one budget hawk to warn of a, quote, debt spiral, close quote. Well, how do you have a debt spiral when you're in the stinky, the bottom of the stinking abyss? And interest paid to what bank? The Wall Street Journal notes that while the exact debt figure isn't as important as other figures, including the ratio of debt to GDP, quote, economists broadly agree, close quote, the U.S. is on, quote, an unsustainable fiscal trajectory, close quote. Both parties have fueled the red ink over decades, but Trump-era efforts to reverse course are faltering. But it never fixed it. He's actually doubled it in the time he's been in. His tariffs were partly struck down by the Supreme Court, forcing $160 billion of refunds, while tax breaks and war costs are swelling deficits. Parenthetically, though, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent insists the tax cuts will pay off with more revenue in the future. The tariff refunds are one reason the national debt crossed the $40 trillion line months earlier than forecasters expected. Months earlier. I guess you go over the hill and down the other side, it gets faster and faster, doesn't it? Because of Trump's illegal tariffs costing Americans, investors are responding by demanding higher yields on long-term treasuries, raising borrowing costs across the economy. Borrowing costs from whom? The debt was expected to reach the milestone next year, but it has jumped by $1 trillion since March. For comparison, it took nearly 200 years for total U.S. debt to reach $1 trillion for the first time in 1981. Why was debt expected is why the debt isn't corrected. As the Treasury announces a buyback scheme, surprise, will at least double size of planned purchases from September 9th through November 4th. A surprise move from the Treasury Department just gave long-term bond markets a jolt, which lasted about 18 hours. On Wednesday, the agency said it will at least double the size of the government's buybacks of its own longer-term debt starting September 9th. That's a revision of the, quote, tentative buyback schedule, close quote, it released only 2 weeks ago, which calls in an, quote, unusual shift, close quote. The 30-year yield quickly slipped from 5.28% to 5.19%, while the 10-year eased to 4.64% from 4.7%. Quote, notably, close quote, but well off of the 3.97% it was at the prior to the war with Iran. The Treasury buybacks will increase from $2 billion Bravo dollars per weekly operation to at least $4 billion Bravo dollars, and the move effectively makes the Treasury a bigger buyer of longer-dated bonds that have been under heavy pressure. What they're doing, as I understand it, they're trading for shorter dated contracts. There's no money here going on. It's just trading for a shorter term. And that helping, this all helped cool the yields that recently hit their highest level since 2007, making borrowing more expensive. That's cool, but not extinguished. It's the cool experience by a can kicked down the road into a ditch. But the Times points out it represents a, quote, relatively small increase in the size of buybacks compared to with the overall size of the Treasury market. There are almost 30 trillion tango dollars of Treasuries outstanding, and the market consistently trades more than 1 billion Bravo dollars a day. I take a little bit of time to pay off, wouldn't it? It was further explained elsewhere that being this isn't a buyback, so much as a transfer from long-term to short-term debt that the Fed will have to authorize more counterfeit fiat to cover it, meaning more debt and cost to service the debt coming. So this buyback, so-called, just extends the economic collapse a bit more. Part of this buyback surprise is that this was actually not a good sign from the Treasury Secretary Bessette. And moving on to follow up of the Venezuela gold theft and the Bank of Rothschild, Bank of England, considering who properly should control the gold once belonging to the Venezuelan people, hot on the heels of what Bessette just did. Placing Venezuela gold under U.S. control could set terrible precedent, an ex-IMF official says, anticipating that question that I broached in the news this last week. In an interview with RT, Paulo Nogueira Batista Jr. weighed in on the potential release of 31 tons of Venezuela gold held by the Bank of England to fund earthquake reconstruction. The prospect of U.S. control over Venezuela's sovereign assets would amount to a, quote, colonial relationship, close quote, and set a, quote, terrible precedent, close quote, for Latin America, former IMF Executive Director Batista Jr. has told RT. Reports have surfaced that some 31 tons of Venezuelan gold, valued at approximately $4 billion Bravo dollars and held at the Bank of England, could be released to fund reconstruction following earthquakes in June, but potentially placed under U.S. Treasury control. The bullion has been inaccessible since 2018, when the Bank of England stopped recognizing the Venezuelan government and froze the country's reserves. Can you smell the theft is on? However, following weeks of U.S.-backed negotiations, the Venezuelan government and opposition recently reached a rare agreement to jointly seek reparations of the assets. To overcome legal hurdles, they proposed converting the gold into funds to be deposited into U.S. Treasury accounts rather than transferred to Venezuela, with spending subject to independent international audits. Okay, well, where's the gold going? The U.S. Treasury had earlier issued a limited license allowing certain disaster relief transactions involving Venezuela, which remains under U.S. sanctions. Since the January 3rd U.S. operation that captured former President Nicolas Maduro, Washington has taken control of Venezuelan export revenues, particularly proceeds from oil sales. Caracas' access to the funds is subject to U.S. decisions. Did they just abduct Maduro? Is that all they did there? What a heist. In an interview released on Tuesday, Batista argued that placing the gold under U.S. control would further violate Venezuela's sovereignty, what there is left, I guess, and allow Washington to effectively, quote, micromanage, close quote, how the country's own wealth is spent. Well, that has to be the work of the people, doesn't it? And they stole the gold wealth. And who produces the resources but the people? By stealing the gold, converted to fraudulent fiat debt instruments on top of it. He noted, however, that such a move would hardly be surprising because, quote, the U.S. not only controls Venezuela after they abducted Maduro, close quote, but, quote, exerts enormous influence over Great Britain, including the Bank of England, close quote. Quote, Venezuela has become a protectorate of the United States. I wouldn't even say neocolonial. It's a colonial relationship, close quote, Batista stated. He warned that placing the bullion under U.S. control would set a, quote, terrible precedent, close quote, for Washington's relations with the rest of Latin America. Quote, we are under threat by U.S. aggressive imperialism, lack of respect for any rules, norms, and the right of property, close quote. Exactly. Gold is property. Fiat debt instruments are not. Fascinating conversion there, isn't it? This is BTWRLM 682. And then right after that, analysis of the warning from the IMF official, how bad it's going to be and what the shadow being cast on the whole of South America now. Venezuela's UK held gold to be released to the U.S. control and foreign audits. Venezuela's sovereign gold reserves. How could you even use the word sovereign there? Venezuelan sovereign gold reserves held by the Bank of England are set to be released and placed under U.S. Treasury Department management. Following recent U.S.-backed talks between the acting Delcy Rodriguez government and representatives of the defunct opposition majority parliament elected in 2015, the two sides agreed to work together to secure the unfreezing of the 31 tons of gold worth around 4.3 billion Bravo dollars at current prices to support post-earthquake recovery efforts. And the price of that, it went up $200 an ounce, the gold did, since that pricing. Ramon Lopez, a member of the opposition delegation, disclosed that the resources would be deposited in a U.S. Treasury bank account and be subjected to external audits. Quote, the gold will be released with the appropriate planning and gold mechanisms, close quote, he said in an interview. The gold will be deposited in a U.S. Treasury account and audited by international firms. Are there any not under some form of Zionist control? Well, they'll make sure to hammer the auditing part, but they'll forget to say the fox is watching the hen house. Lopez added that the resources will be used on housing and healthcare projects, as well as support for families who lost their homes in June 24th double earthquake. Quote, the expenses will be permanently audited, close quote, he added. The former deputy did not specify whether the gold would be transferred to the U.S. or exchanged. The Rodriguez administration has not commented on the foreign custodianship of the country's reserves. The U.S.-endorsed dialogue also saw the government and opposition agree to reform the Supreme Court and renew its justices. Who's running the country there? Appointing magistrates is a constitutional competency of the Venezuelan National Assembly, which also had a commission evaluating candidacies. The process will now restart. Successive U.K. governments, both conservative and labor, followed Washington in refusing to recognize Nicolas Maduro government and return the gold to Caracas. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Venezuelan authorities launched a legal effort to reclaim the reserves from the Bank of England, with plans to channel the proceeds through the United Nations to strengthen the healthcare system, but the UK courts rejected it. Notwithstanding that diversion, no health care for you, and no gold for you either. The gold reserves, soon to be debt instruments, are the latest Venezuelan state assets taken over by Washington since the January 3rd U.S. attack on and kidnapping of Maduro. The Trump administration has seized control of Venezuela export revenues, particularly the crude sales, with the disbursement timings and amounts left to the discretion of Washington officials. But the mafia has nothing on this organized crime syndicate, do it. Luigi Pesella, appointed by acting President Rodriguez to a commission evaluating state assets for privatization, recently stated that Washington is deducting the cost of its military operation from Venezuela's oil revenues. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has maintained economic sanctions against Venezuela, issuing only waivers allowing select Western corporations to strike energy agreements with Caracas following pro-business legislative overhauls. Following the June 24th earthquake, the U.S. Treasury issued a limited license allowing relief-related transactions until October. Apart from the UK-held gold reserves, Venezuelan officials have also called for the release of other frozen assets, including 4.5 billion Bravo dollars in IMF special drawing rights and multiple U.S. and Europe-based bank accounts belonging to state institutions. So who said those SDRs weren't in play anymore? There they is. We don't worry about the multipolar world, do we? The 2015 opposition-controlled parliament has administered billions of dollars of Venezuelan state assets abroad despite its term expiring in January 2021. Up until March 26th, the democracy that it is. Up until March 26th, Washington recognized the defunct opposition-led legislature as Caracas's legitimate authority. That's about right. Recognizing defunct. Opposition figures, including former self-proclaimed, quote, interim president, close quote, Juan Guaido, were implicated in major corruption allegations related to the handling of the country's assets. Remember the Fort Knox audit? Maybe Trump found out something, and maybe the Venezuela gold is headed there? And as a reminder, prior to the Venezuela gold theft, Treasury Secretary Bessent says the U.S. has grabbed $1 billion Bravo dollars in crypto from Iran. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said the U.S. has, quote, just outright grabbed the wallets. Some of them may be typing right now, and they might not have realized that their wallet has been grabbed, close quote. So when I ask you what's in your wallet, the Iranians can't even tell you. They're saying, what wallet now? The U.S. stole it. The U.S. government has seized vast sums of cryptocurrency. Are you folks listening to this? And your stable coins? Bitcoins? The U.S. government has seized vast sums of cryptocurrency from entities linked to Iran's military since the war broke out in February, according to Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. Oh, since the war broke out is an interesting way to describe Trump's lawless act of aggression that not even Trump wanted to call it war. Speaking Friday at the 2026 Reagan National Economic Forum in Simi Valley, California, he said that some actors holding digital assets may not even know the funds are gone. And it's gone! And you want into the Siberian Gulag. The statement reflects the U.S. government's sweeping crackdown on Iran's government, which benefits from flow of oil through the Strait of Hormuz. Amid the conflict, the waterway, no territory there, through which 20% of the world's oil flows, has largely remained choked. Is anybody really making sense of all this? Well, unless it's an organized crime syndicate, leading the way for Israel to grow even greater, right? The Zionists, when you look at the background of all this, who are these people? What are their affiliations? What are they, the zealots, promoting? And we move over to another not-so-clearly delineated Zionist project, but in the originating lands, U.S. should return to shuttle diplomacy on Ukraine, ex-White House aide believes. United States should resume alternate negotiations with Moscow and Kiev to bring the two sides closer together on resolving the conflict in Ukraine, Thomas Graham, former special assistant to President George W. Bush and senior director for Russia on the National Security Council staff from 2004 to 2007, believes. Kremlin aide Yuri Yuzhakov announced in July that U.S. negotiator Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner would continue mediation efforts and were prepared to return to Moscow. They last visited the Russian capital together on January 22, 2026, and met with President Vladimir Putin. Quote, Washington needs to engage in shuttle diplomacy to bridge the now yawning gaps between Moscow and Kyiv. Much of the diplomacy will be conducted bilaterally, but there may be times when trilateral talks are called for, Graham told Sputnik. In his opinion, at certain stages, it may also be necessary to directly involve European countries in the discussion. In December 2025, Putin referred to the contacts between U.S. representatives with Russia, Ukraine, and Europe as, quote, shuttle diplomacy. Isn't that an expensive way to proceed, shuttling people back and forth across the face of the earth when there's digital video? What do you mean it's not secure? Meanwhile, as the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, Russia hopes that the United States will return to the process of resolving the conflict in Ukraine once it has dealt with Iran. As I mentioned last episode, it was a BTWRLM 681 as to things this administration does stupidly relative to a legitimate national interest or that Iran will be resolved before Trump uses it to destroy the economy and furthers the greater Zionist project of global conquest. How absurd the notion that the U.S. can mediate this matter as a neutral arbiter, having caused it and intending it to continue. Or that a Zionist billionaire boy's brother-in-law, said to be a real estate developer, can negotiate the end to a genocide. in this case, from the river to the sea, because that certainly isn't in the interest of the Palestinians. Or is that the tell? That the U.S. is not interested if it could be impartial, and that supposed negotiators are only self-interested because we know that from their fruits, their deeds. And you knows them when you sees them, right, Dr. Francis Liebercoat? Even if Kushner or Witkoff had not chosen to be Zionist zealots for the Zionist political movement, a people who declare to themselves the power reserved to God to praise a Jew, it will come to pass that in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ, according to my gospel, as we read at Romans 2:16, who will render to every man according to his deeds, at Romans 2:6, that he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision, which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God, as we can clearly see at Romans 2, 28-29. And what are the fruits of those that displace God that we can witness? Those that did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind, to those things which are not convenient. Man, that defines government, doesn't it? To those things which are not convenient. At 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, at 30, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boastful, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, 31, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. Number 32, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have the pleasure in them that do them. At Romans 16, 1:28-32. Now, why is Russia promoted Orthodox, even entertaining this evil and not calling it out? Why do the occupied people of Palestine have to disarm while the foreign, illegal, belligerent, occupying, invading force do not, is the problem. And anyone not seeing this or choosing not to see this is a problem of the world for those in the world, in witness whereof so many will not see, and so arrogantly, it appears, people are making their final choice as we speak. And I'm likely not as patient as I should be with this increasingly overwhelming evil and those choosing to support it, and pray Jesus Christ tarries not much longer in all mercies. As we can look at a couple of things in those lists, and murder was one there, wasn't it? Ex-Fauci advisor pleads guilty. Dr. David Morenz admits plotting to conceal COVID-19 research records during pandemic. How many people died from this great COVID swindle? The murderers. A former senior advisor to infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci pleaded guilty Tuesday to plotting to conceal federal records related to research on the origins of the deadly COVID-19 pandemic, which is going to continue to be covered up. Dr. David Morenz is scheduled to be sentenced November 12th by U.S. District Judge Paula Zinnes in Greenbelt, Maryland. Morenz pleaded guilty to conspiring to defraud the United States government, a felony punishable by maximum prison sentence of 5 years. Very clearly here, it's not getting punished for the murders that were caused by the failure to provide the truth. And I told you this a long while back. The United States Code for law for crime is mainly things done against the government itself. That's all that the government's interested in, not helping you. Quote, by pleading guilty today, Dr. Morenz has taken responsibility for what he did, and he will continue to do so, close quote, defense attorney Tim Belevitz said after the plea hearing. Morenz is accused of using his private email account to intentionally circumvent public records laws while employed at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. The Justice Department alleges that he concealed or destroyed records of discussions related to COVID-19 research grants, including an effort to revive a controversial coronavirus grant. that clearly states that they knew the coronavirus was out there, and we only know about the SARS-CoV-2 stuff, don't we? The government was paying for this. Another proof. Not that this is new, just another proof. The indictment follows a probe by the House Republicans into the origins of COVID-19 pandemic that scrutinized Moren's email communications and accused him of intentionally concealing records. In congressional testimony, Moren's denied attempting to evade federal transparency laws by using his personal email. In July, Fauci repeatedly invoked the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination during a congressional hearing on his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. And they keep pumping the word pandemic, don't they? And they keep pumping that there was a symptoms pandemic, not a cause. No infectious agent. Notice that. No infectious agent ever mentioned. Last Friday, Fauci declined to request to appear voluntarily before a second Senate panel after majority Republicans on the Homeland Security Committee voted along partisan lines to hold him in contempt of Congress. Fauci wasn't charged in the case against Moran's, who is 78. And we talked last week about glove, the shocking gloves that ICE agents will be wearing. Well, this week we find out ICE agents will have to leave their Meta glasses at home. Federal agency bans camera-equipped eyewear over privacy surveillance concerns. Surveillance concerns? That's exactly what the government goons threatened people with, remember? Meta's camera-equipped eyewear just hit a wall at one of the U.S. government's most scrutinized agencies. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has formally barred all staff from wearing Meta's smart glasses in the, quote, federal workspace, close quote. Are you getting this, folks? Right in the street. Federal workspace. And you think we're in the original establishment after Lincolnization. Saying the devices amount to personal body cameras that could inadvertently capture or transmit, quote, sensitive information, close quote. And those of you that may contact me about these flock cameras and some lawsuits that you're drafting and the information and the studies that are being done, take note of this one. May I want to go get this court case and read what the judge was saying. There might be some additional late-breaking information about how we're going to use that. Because being in public didn't used to be a problem. Sensitive information you have on the street didn't used to be a problem. This court case seems to have changed something about that. If anybody's still listening to me about that and communicating with me about this just recently, I'll just let you know to go there with this article, get the link. The move follows criticism of ICE agents seen using the glasses as protests and amid immigration crackdowns with Engadget and the Independent rounding up some more recent examples. It also comes as New York courts, some businesses and privacy advocates raise alarms about discrete recording for potential facial recognition. ICE, which has no partnership with Meta, is separately seeking $7.5 million to develop its own enforcement-focused smart glasses, including biometric ID features. So take note of this. We're going to internalize this infrastructure. And that's the word, infrastructure. Any of this is tied to anything that connects it up to anything else is the general warrant by definition that I can see. For those of you that are doing the study and coming to me with your ideas, this is what seems to be, when I relook at this and synthesize the information you're finding out, just the fact that it's connected to an infrastructure system becomes the new general warrant. As I talk with people that come and discuss this, you're having your theories. But I'm saying be careful in becoming too wild or too creative with that theory about how this applies. It's pretty straightforward, it seems to me. That doesn't mean you don't put stuff down that you think is right. I'm just saying look and focus into the nuts and bolts of this thing is what causes and creates this. Meta declined to comment. The company has touted the glasses as a key piece of its artificial intelligence strategy. Again, the infrastructure that's built in behind this is what's creating the problem relative to a Fourth Amendment overreach, or Fourth Amendment breach or infringement. And we heard ICE agents were getting the glove, the G-L-O-V. This week we hear Omaha schools ask police to stop using shot gloves. And I'll tell you, last week I didn't know anything about it. And this week, they've already been in the schools. They've been all in schools now. Kids, little kids, getting shocked the monkey, I guess. Officers have been carrying the same device as ICE plans to give agents. Omaha police have agreed to stop carrying gloves that can deliver electric shocks to students in the halls of Nebraska's largest public school district. The decision affecting most Omaha middle and high schools come after the AP first revealed Immigration and Customs Enforcement plans to give officials the gloves, called generated low output voltage emitters. The devices have also been used in recent years by some jails. Omaha Superintendent Matthew Ray requested that police working in the buildings as school resource officers stop using the gloves. The Omaha Department agreed. However, the suburban Bellevue Police Department, which patrols two Omaha schools and the large Bellevue District, said its officers will continue carrying the gloves. Three other large school districts in the metro area that have Omaha school resource officers assigned to their buildings have not taken action to stop police from using the devices. The Millard, Elkhorn, and Westside districts are also patrolled by Omaha officers. The Bellevue school spokeswoman said the district has a great relationship with Bellevue police and doesn't see a need to alter anything. Omaha police used the gloves twice during the 2025-2026 school year, and Bellevue police have also used them twice in previous years. Years! Never heard of them before, this last week. It's been there years. Shows how much I get around. At last week's school board meeting in Omaha, about 30 people spoke out against police using gloves. Residents and board members alike said they were appalled at the practice. No one spoke in favor of it. Quote, I can't imagine walking down the hallway and seeing a peer of mine being electrocuted in a place that is supposed to be a safe space for students, close quote, said Nora Wessel, a senior at Omaha Central High School, adding, these are adults we are supposed to be able to trust. The Omaha Police Department said officers will continue to carry tasers, batons, OC spray, and firearms. But what are they complaining about? Pains and punishments are their civil rights. Again, you can read that at Title 42, USC 1981, together with taxes, lots of other things. And what got us partly here is the legal profession and their judges and the Bar Association and how they've slowly contorted the place as far as I can see. And I believe I can see that relatively clearly being engaged with the system. Watching the black and white not work, watching exactly what we're told the corruption works as, being able to predict it, and then in the past, looking at certain times where judges got together in time, not in the court cases, but there's times in our history when you read the court cases and the decisions look just absolutely dead on in the law. And I said last episode, you wonder where are those judges? Not to answer that question, but to potentially look into the future. And I've talked about this organization extensively behind Woodshed. Again, it might be what helps bring up the problems that we see, why we have so little control anymore. And again, we always have the condition, the problem that may be that we are an occupied country and there's another reason why they get to do this. But I've also researched lots of things that show that, again, we are infiltrated and different ideologies will do that to take control. And you see that throughout history. This organization seems to be one of them. Trump's administration wants ABA out of accrediting law schools. Organization says it follows laws and rules. President Trump is moving against the gatekeeper for American law schools. The Education Department began moving Friday to strip the American Bar Association of its role approving law schools for federal purposes, calling the ABA-run system a, quote, cartel, close quote, that injects politics into accreditation. And I want to take this as a start because it's a whole lot worse than even what they're saying here. That is irrefutably proven where the ABA House delegates has resolved since 1991, as far as I can find and have read behind the woodshed, that they promote sustainable development. As well, that the ABA is integrated into the judicial branch of governments, as well likely has advanced and had legislation enacted to overthrow the permanent laws of the people for a Model Business Corporation Act, as I exposed happened in Oregon in 1953, which can be read at ORS 174, about 510, and then the following legislation that's about four or five more sections. It's known as Enrolled House Bill Number 2. And I think Art of Craig S. covered that 1998 article, Pee in a Cup, that detailed that overthrow and so much more information. A 500-page department report argues the ABA's accreditation arm is too enmeshed with the legal profession it oversees. The Bar Association counters that it follows federal rules and delivers unmatched outcomes in training licensed attorneys. So interject their outcomes relative to what they consider sustainable development and all the outcomes that are pressed to transform your society. Modernize it. Quote, where there's no competition, accreditors feel free to inject their own political preferences, their own ideologies into the work that they do, close quote, said David Barker of the Education Department. But sustainable development is an ideology contrary to the organic principles of the United States of America, but that subversion by this domesticated foreign entity is just for starters. Melissa Hart, the ABA's Accreditation Council chair, told the Washington Post that the council already complies with federal law and the department's requirements for accreditors. And I want you to understand how that works as we hear AIPAC and the Zionists saying, well, we worked within your laws to get the influence we have. It's not a different thing here. Any final decision is months away and would have to clear two more review steps. If the ABA loses, university-based law schools could lean on their university's existing accreditors, while standalone schools would have to find new ones. And I've talked to you extensively about the university system usurpation of our government, of our countries, of our states, and how that all works. It's part of the built-in system that really Trump is now onboarding. He talks like he wants to throw it out, and this would be a start to begin there. But it actually onshores the infrastructure, the system you'll never see that's actually now capturing everybody. And we talked about, again, climate change is not about the weather. Sustainable development is an ideology and it's a political interjection. Right? So we talk about now, it's not about the weather, but we have some weather going on. And I want to touch a little bit of this. Pretty interesting what's going on out there. Crucial Southwest Reservoir is 30 feet from big trouble. Now, this is reality that we have to deal with, not really the stuff that Greta would deal with. If Lake Mead keeps dropping, its Glen Canyon Dam won't be able to generate power. And this is happening in Europe as well. Danube, the Rhine, are drying up to the point that they can't keep their nuclear power plants cooled. The West's two giant water-saving accounts are now in record territory, and not the good kind. Well, this country is bankrupt no matter where you look, isn't it? Lake Powell on the Utah-Arizona line dropped to its lowest level ever over the weekend following Lake Mead's similar plunge a week earlier. Developments that leave the Colorado River system at its weakest point since 1959. Take note, since 1959, Greta, before the man-made Powell even existed. Oh, so not unprecedented. We've seen this before, and with a lot less people. The drops threatened water and electricity supplies for several states. If Powell drops another 30 feet, its Glen Canyon Dam would no longer be able to generate hydropower. You can exist without the remaining diverted electrical powering AI needs, right? We can live like cavemen without electricity again, right? So we've got this. Let's not worry. Been there, done that. Current forecasts call for that to happen as quickly as this winter, depending on precipitation between now and then. If Powell drops below the critical level, it may also hit what's known as quote, Deadpool, close quote, status, meaning no water would move through the dam, cutting off the water supply to rivers lower basin states of Nevada, Arizona, and California. What's a surveillance? I mean, data center going to do without water? They steal what's left from you? So this perfect non-storm confrontation might be coming at the right time. If the people lose the fight for their water, then there will be no need for their surveillance. I mean, data centers, will there? Scientists link the drops to a 20-year stretch of hotter, drier conditions that has cut the river's flow by about a fifth, even as cities and farms keep drawing more than it can reliably provide. In its analysis of all this, the Times notes that it's the worst dry spell for the Southwest in 1,200 years. So it happened in 1,200 years ago, kind of, sort of rules out climate change, don't it? Well, of course it do. Because like SMART is not too intelligent, climate change is not about the weather. The very thing that the ABA would promote through its promotion of sustainable development that's integrated with the judicial branches of every state. You see it in the rules. It's integrated in the state judicial branch. Having those trained people trained in their way to make the decisions that they can get away with, as I've been telling you. And now, finally, to his credit, Trump administration's focusing on it. Not sure about the accreditation. I'm not sure about the limitation. It's not in the federal government. We have to worry about it as much as the states. It certainly needs to be extricated from both. The accreditation just gets readjusted, and there are going to be others that step in. Again, we start talking about altering or abolish. Where do we start? Another aspect rears its ugly hydra head here that has to be dealt with. Getting rid of the ability to being an accreditor might be a start, but you have all these attorneys that are all part of the membership, all get this mindset, whether they understand it or not. The peer pressure alone must be immense that they don't even know is working on them. If they're honest, even if they're honest lawyers, the honest lawyers I knew, they stopped being lawyers. They stopped being the attorney that got the state wanted them to be. They said it's too corrupt, way too corrupt. And the court cases I've told you about, and helping, particularly one of, I know you can go there because that's what we had to deal with it, in Tennessee. Right there in the Supreme Court rules. I had David Tulis bifurcate his case. We went judicially and then we went administrative to the Supreme Court. So we had to go into the administrative side of the Supreme Court and the rules there and look at how they're situated, how they're established. And right there in there, it says that they refer to the ABA. That's how influential everything gets. That's how controlled it really is. When I say I don't really, when I tell you I don't like to focus on any one threat, like I don't, or the Jews, that I don't like using the term the Zionists, that's a political movement. Climate change, it's a political movement. Sustainable development, it's a political movement with foreign ideologies built into it. And so it's not just one. You start looking at all this, they all support each other as well. All these different factions all start to support each other. And so it's not such an easy thing to say, and I'd never like to focus on, you say one thing, you're going to eliminate looking at anything else. You focus in on one, and there might be 10 more. And with my background, you look around, you see it. You see how they can be, how they can make it look normal. You won't even know that you're dealing with it, and most of us don't. Some of us do. Just know, you know, they want to say conspiracy theory. Well, when I can predict the conspiracy that's harming people, we're kind of beyond theory, aren't we? And each one of us has to make that decision at the time. There's not an argument that we get into. Remember, the one in the list is a debater. Some of the debates that you get into may not be valid. Some are set up to take you down, set up for the takedown. That's what seems legal seems with the American Bar Association set up the way it is. You go in there and waste your time. They got judges that legislate from the bench. And like I told you, had I not had to go through that recent court case a few years ago, I was able to see it right there, where the law, black and white as it was, said that there is an ability, a remedy that's ex parte, which is normally not to be happening. The legislature, despite the fact that it's normally not to happen, that you go in by yourself, one side party sues another for a relief in the equity jurisdiction. The legislature said the wrong that was done by the party being wrong is great enough that the party doing the wrong doesn't have the right of notice. It's supposed to stop, period. Stop the harm it's doing immediately. Then a equity judge has the power to do that justice. When I went into a court with the black and white written right there for him to read, and he denied it, I had my first opportunity to see for myself, not someone telling me, because I'd heard it before, what legislating from the bench is. And when you see that, you start to look around, and then you start observing other problems and breaches. It becomes real easy to notice more, at least for yourself, what you're up against. And you start to have this problem. It's like going to vote harder, and you're going to legal harder. But at some point, you need to still engage some of these systems. But that's all you're doing. It's a setup game. It's not just what they said about injecting politics. It's the monopolization that becomes the problem. It's the membership that protects its own that becomes the problem. And so this is a much bigger problem, I see. I'm glad to see it out there. I don't know how far it's going to go. With Taco Tuesday around the corner, who knows what's going to happen with this ABA? They have their ways. They are the attorneys that do their defense, right? And yet, for someone who really pays attention, those of you that do this stuff with the law, that want to see the law work again, that try to seek justice, that attempt to get accountability, and you face one of these ABA judges, and you start reading what's going on, what's supposed to go on against what's going on in the court, then you start to understand there's a bigger problem. It's no different than how I was able to identify back in 2002 or so, how Pamela Gaston and Will Gaston were violated by the Child Services Court judge. And I'm looking at a video of the recording of that hearing, and I'm saying, that judge just violated your rights, and it just handed the case over to the state, and he had no right to do that. And there's a rule, and I pointed out the rule for that. He can't do that, but they did. They didn't even know that. See, we don't know. Had I not seen that, that started my trek on looking at child services as the child trafficking system that it is. It's an internal setup inside the system, and they all come out of the ABA training and accreditations. All the law schools are this way. All the law schools promote the environmentalists that will destroy us. It's the fights I had early on when I got into the mining law, because we had a mining claim and had to defend us, and helping miners defend themselves against environmental terrorists, essentially. And they're using, talk about lawfare, exactly. They use that citizen suit ability in the Clean Water Act to take people out. And the courts would allow it. And there's no law for it. No law. The law would allow that, but you look at the court case, there was no right to sue someone with a government grant to be on the land that they're using. And the courts would ignore that. Because they're pushing the environmental agenda. It's not justice. It's a whole branch of our governments, all of them, the states and the federal, that have been usurped. Like, we can't vote ourselves out. We can't go to a court to get justice to fix that problem either. And so we have these wholesale problems that are sitting there, now going to be AI enhanced from the legislature, that we have some serious discussion, if we will, to discuss, to figure out how do we approach this problem? How do we get at it? And I bring, hopefully, something every week to show you the connection, the interconnection, the logic, the dynamics that are coming in through the excuses being used, so that we get it in our mind what we're up against. And that maybe that day is coming, I'm hoping. I've been doing this for quite a long time. Been fortunate to be able to do it for quite a long time. Again, donate if you can, reallibertymedia.com, find the donate button. If you have any thought that I'm helping people, we need to be able to keep the network running. I've been dedicating myself as best as I can to be here every week as I could until we had that certain problem. And I've been up against a serious, serious hardship. But I still believe it's important that I come once a week, even if it's hard for me to figure out what I want to talk about. Again, I've talked about all this stuff before. I don't think there's anything, well, except for like Trump this year, the glove, the ICE, never talked too much about that in the past. It has all the same roots. It has all the same oppression coming on us. It furthers that same thing that's going on. And I hope you've appreciated what I've done, those of you that have heard me, and I hope those of you that are just tuning in, stick with us. Get on to reallibertymedia.com, get the archives, start listening. Listen to other hosts. Find those that help you to understand a little bit better. And don't just sit there and listen. The blogcaster is set up for you to go learn, go get the links, go read, go look and read and see what I've been reading, what I highlight, Start there if you don't have another idea, and then start your research to qualify it. And you prove out what I'm saying for you. And then you figure out within that milieu what you're going to choose to do. Because the problem of Alter Abolish was the license that the usurpers used to take us out. We have the duty and obligation to stop them. They don't. And you're watching that play out in Israel, the Israelis in Palestine. And you just heard me say a mistake statement and how easy it is to get us into the dialogue that admits that they would have a place, and they don't. They're an illegal occupier. They're a belligerent in the world. They do everything, almost everything I read says they're not to be doing unless they're of a reprobate mind. And those of us that I would pray we are not of the reprobate mind, why we can see it, we're not doing enough. And part of the answer is being an example while we're waiting and moving along for the time when it all stops. It all ends. That's on each one of us as well. Kind of fractal in a way that way. Reduces down to each one of us making the decision to make the choice to then create the fruits that are plentiful and proper. This has been BTW RLM 682, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs or Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, listen to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.